Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the Poolside Pass podcast. On today's episode, I'm joined by two coaches, so it's the first time for me having two coaches on a recorded episode of the podcast. Obviously, we had three coaches on at once when we did the live podcast over in Series 1. This is the first time having two coaches on from the same program to talk about how they work together. So this week, we're joined by Stuart McNary and Adam Baker from the Swansea High Performance Centre. And this week we're going to be discussing obviously how they work together as a team over at their performance centre, but also preparing swimmers and taking swimmers on that journey to the Olympic Games, which are currently taking place out in Tokyo. So it'll be interesting to hear Adam and Stuart's thoughts on preparing swimmers for the Olympic Games and then send them off to going away to an Olympic camp. This is the penultimate episode in the series. Hope to be bringing you episode 8 in just a few weeks. Going to take a few weeks break, just let everyone enjoy the Olympic Games, and then hopefully I'll be able to get episode 8 to you once the Olympic Games is done and dusted. But you know, episode 7 here, if you've not heard the 6 episodes prior to that with Kevin Pickard, Russ Barber, Rick Hall, Sean Barmer, Andy Manley and Robin Armayan, then make sure you go and check those out, subscribe to the podcast, and you can get all those plus many, many more that we recorded in series 1, 2, 3 of the podcast. So without further ado, let's get into the show. Okay, so I think it's about time I welcome Stuart and Adam to the podcast. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, really good. Things have gone pretty well over the last few weeks with the preparation for the guys going off to the game. So they finally left on Saturday. So I think we're in a good place, ready for them to go.
And not only that, the guys that are left behind, they're currently gearing up to, they have an opportunity. We've got a sort of a mini meet, if you like, where their times will be ratified for Commonwealth Games as well. So we can start to put people on Commonwealth Games teams this summer as well. So,
oh, awesome.
Everyone's got a purpose still left this season. It's not just a piece of Olympic guys and that's it. So.
Oh, that's great. So why don't we start by just getting briefly both your backgrounds in coaching and swimming. This is the first time I've had kind of two guests on at once, so it'll be interesting for guests to hear kind of both your backgrounds and see how you got to where you're at now.
Okay, so I started coaching maybe 25 years ago, maybe a bit longer perhaps. Swam at Southampton, CS Southampton Swimming Club, until I was about 18, 19, and then went into a little bit of coaching with the program, and then moved to my first head coach's role in Hazelmere, a little club just south of Guildford. Was there for 5 years, and then moved to Stockport Metro as a junior coach there. Did quite a lot of work with Sean Kelly. And the senior program, so my role was sort of interchanging between the juniors and the senior program. And then I moved to Swansea in 2007, where I was head coach at Swim Swansea for 10 years before we set up the Swim Wales High Performance Centre, which was 4 years ago, maybe, or four years ago. So that's very brief on where I started and where we are at the moment.
And Stuart, what about yourself?
I'm similar sort of thing, but obviously from a different neck of the woods. My swimming career was back home in Ireland. Came over to uni in Cardiff, and once I finished my university degree in Cardiff, I sort of went into coaching basically to help by a small club in Devon who were looking for a coach to cover for someone before they appointed someone else. So the plan was for me to go in for 2 or 3 weeks, and it was just to help them out. I ended up being there for just over 5 years, then moved from Tiverton, where that was, to Exeter. I was the head coach in the city of Exeter for 6 years, I think. And then from Exeter, I moved to here, where since then I've been employed by Swim Wales under various roles. Originally, my role was more to do with the university, but it sort of evolved over the years to now become the performance centre as we are, with the two of us working within the same program, if you like.
Awesome. So, like I said before, this is the first time we've had kind of two coaches on the podcast at the same time where it's not been, we did one before, we had three, and that was part of a kind of live Q&A, but this is the first time we've had two coaches kind of recording an episode at the same time. And that's because at the High Performance Centre in Swansea, you kind of work side by side. And, you know, that's, for me, it's a really interesting dynamic to kind of dig into. How does, you know, how does your program work, and what goes on to make sure that, you know, you two are working together really well?
So we have 16, in a normal year, we would have 16 athletes. Clearly that's changed a little bit since the pandemic, but we normally have 16 athletes, and we do a lot of work as one group. When we need to be really specific for individual events and strokes, the athletes then split between the two coaches. So currently that split would be myself working with the freestyle guys.
Yeah.
And Stuart working with the backstroke and the fly guys. And we currently have Graham Wardell as well from Cardiff. He's in the High Performance Centre at the moment because we're still in an elite bubble because of COVID. So he's working with the breaststroke guys.
Right.
So that's how we work. They do a lot of work together throughout the week as one group. And then it's very specific when it needs to be.
Right.
I don't know if you've got anything else to...
Yeah, I think the important thing for it to work, Jimmy, is everyone needs to be working towards the same end goal. Having been here over those 10, 11 years, and Adam can vouch for this as well, when we were first here, everyone was working for either a different employer between Britishmen, Welshmen, the club, or you know, different fraternities, and each person then had their own sort of work objectives and agendas, if you like, and it got quite difficult to keep a program harmonious, everyone on the same program. So with both of us working under both under Swim Wheels and both having the same agenda, the same goals, it does actually make it a lot easier.
Perfect, brilliant. So obviously you've got a few athletes heading out to, or just as you mentioned, head out to the Olympic Games in Tokyo that are happening. One of those is Alice Thomas. Now, just, you know, from my perspective as a swimming fan, but also a swimming coach as well, like reading into some of Alice's story, it's quite a different story to perhaps some of those others that are on the team. It's been a really like a long time coming for her to make an Olympic team, right?
Yeah. And was so close in 16, and yeah, that was a bit of pill to swallow, but it was black and white. You know, if you haven't done the time, you don't go. So, you know, I think it was more than being so close and it didn't come off. But I think then that gave her the motivation to carry on, to realize that dream that she's had since she was, you know, a 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old swimmer. So, you know, the bulk of that motivation has come from within to achieve what she set out to do all those years ago.
So I just want to dig in a little bit to kind of, from a coaching perspective, what were the kind of keys to making sure that, like you said there, the motivation for her came mostly from within, but, you know, what were the keys kind of on your part as coaches to making sure that journey kept moving, especially after 2016, when you, like you say, it was, you know, so close and it just missed out?
I think the key thing is just setting goals. And those goals don't necessarily just have to be based on a competition. It can be, you know, goals that we're working on in training, or, you know, that you're doing something with a purpose all the time. So if something comes off, great, do it. But you still reset. You still have the next goal. But even more so, if something doesn't come off, it's how you then, you know, refocus. Do you keep doing the same thing? Do you change something? You know, is there a different focus you're going to work towards or whatever? But it's all about the goal setting and having, we all say it, short, medium, and long-term goals. So the stuff that you can be working on day to day, but then the bigger picture of trying to achieve that dream you've always had. So, there's been a number of different things we've tried to do. After 16, we made a call with Alice. We went on a camp in, Gold Coast?
Gold Coast.
And we had done it the year before, where Alice had gone and spent, or I'd taken both Alice and Harriet actually to Michael Ball just for a day. And we thought there was so much that she could get from going back and spending a bit of time. So we actually, the following winter, she spent an extra week in Australia with Michael. And then the following year, she actually went out for a month on her own to Australia. And those are the things that I think have really helped. Because at that time in his program, he had a lot of world-class butterfly swimmers. You know, he had an Olympic silver medalist from the two fly in Rio. So I think it gave her the understanding, hang on a minute, I can actually compete with these girls. I can go toe-to-toe with them in training. So that was it, I think, that made a big difference for her.
And I just want to, because you say as a group, at the High Performance Centre, a lot of the time kind of you work as one group, but then when it needs to be individualised, you know, you've got the flexibility to be able to do that. You know, you've also got someone like Dan Jervis going out on distance free, and that's, you know, something that perhaps you look after a bit more, Adam. When you say you work kind of together as a group, when you've got swimmers that might have vastly different events, how much of the same stuff can they be getting done?
So we start every session as a group. So traditionally, I suppose as a coaching program, you would have a warm-up, a pre-set, a main set, and a swim down. We have it slightly different. So we just have sets 1 through 4. So set 1 is always together, every session, every day. And we rotate who leads that. So like this morning, I led that, and tomorrow, Stu will lead that. So that's how that first bit works. And then also throughout the week, I would run a whole session with the group. And then later on in the week, Stuart would run a whole session with the group. So the athletes get to see and work with both of us on an individual or a lead type role. And then the rest of the sessions throughout the week, as I said, they start together as one group. And then we would split for sets 2 and 3. And then sometimes we might come back together for set 4. But sets 2 and 3 are normally the key block of work. That's when they're really specific. Sets 1 and 4 are normally more around the technical element. So although they're working together, it's still very, very individualized around what each athlete needs.
So when you say,
I think it took a while for the athletes to take it on board that there was actually two coaches in the program. And there are a lot of people out there outside of Swansea who still don't really get that there's two coaches working in the same program. But I think we've got to the point now where the athletes, although, for example, Alice will spend most of her week with me and Dan would spend most of his week with ads, they're all comfortable chatting to each other now. So that, you know, they see us now as a program rather than this is my coach.
Yeah.
So they'd be quite happy to go to a meet with either of us. So like the Manchester meets in the lockdown, I didn't go to those. So Dan would work with Stu and we swap it around when we need to. And the athletes are really comfortable, like Stu said, with both of us. Although there is a lead coach, I suppose, or a point of contact coach, yeah, if you like, when we go to meets for all the athletes. So there's no confusion between what they do when they get out of competition. But Stu and I have been working together for so long now, I think the way we communicate with the athletes, we pretty much know what to say and when not to say things with all the athletes in the group.
I think it's like, you say, like some people struggle to understand it or whatever, but I think it's really interesting. And I think
you just need to look outside of swimming. You know, you look at a lot of different sports now, you know, and probably the example that we looked at the most was the NFL. You might have an overall head coach,
yeah,
but you have an offensive coach, you have a defensive coach, you know, even in football, you have a goalkeeping coach, you'll have rugby is the same. So if that works in all those sports, there's no reason why it can't work within swimming as well.
No, well, yeah.
We've tried different things around stroke-specific groups or distance-specific groups. So a couple of seasons ago, we split the group into strokes. Into distance groups. So Stuart would be working with the 100 and the 200 guys, and then I would be 400 and above. And then we changed that slightly because there wasn't enough 400 and above athletes, if you like, to make that work. So like I said, now we're working in stroke groups, which has seemed to work pretty well for the last two seasons. So the medley guys tend to do a little bit of work with me, but when they need to work fly and breaststroke, they would go and do that with Stu. Yeah, and that communication between the two different sides is what's really important within that.
And I think the planning of it, so what we traditionally did was do a coaches meeting on Monday morning.
Yeah.
But by the time you do that meeting and you action anything from it, you're halfway into the week.
Yeah.
So what we do now is we meet on a Friday and plan the following week then. So as if there's any adjustments to a swimmer's balance or who they're going to work with, it's all done. They understand it before the end of the previous week and they're ready to roll with it then on the Monday. They've got time to think about it and take it on board. And again, it's just communicating and getting your point across in enough time that it's not rushed and everyone knows what you're working towards.
Right. So another thing I think is like really a positive effect that the way that your centre works is that the swimmers are comfortable working kind of between coaches. So working with one coach and working with another coach, which means that potentially when they go, like you say, like you sent Alice away to Michael Bowling in Australia, or when they go away on a team somewhere, they're comfortable working with other coaches on a regular basis. So it's not so much of a big thing or big change to them when they go away and do that, right?
Yeah, and that's something for our Olympians that, you know, they're going to have to deal with. You know, when you look at the bulk of the guys on the Olympic team, a lot of them are with a coach from either their home coach or a coach from within their centre. So, you know, the three that are based in Swansea are probably, bar one or two others, are in a scenario where they're learning to adapt to work with a coach that they don't see on a day-to-day basis. So, but they should be comfortable with that based on what they get here, and they're able to go back and forth between the two of us.
So I was going to touch on this later on in the episode, but I guess we've kind of naturally come to it now. Once those swimmers kind of are away on that camp as they are now, is it something that you're looking to have kind of regular contact with them or and their coaches, or is it something where you just kind of let them go and do that on their own now?
No, I wouldn't let them go and do it on their own. They you know, we've done our job with them. We've sent them away on Saturday, having done what we needed to do. They will now move into their coach, Dave Hemmings, and then they that's their arena coach, if you like, at the games, and then they're going to be with you and Dowell in the holding camp. The athletes know where they are, know where we are if they need us. We will have contact with the coaching team out there with Dave. So we've arranged to have that discussion and Mal for Harriet as well. But I don't think we're going to be in contact with them that often unless they get in contact with us.
Right.
Because they need to be comfortable out there. We can't see what they're doing. So we don't want to be giving them information that maybe differs from what they're getting out there at the moment. So we've handed them over. Any issue, the coach will get back to us. I think that's the best way of doing that.
Yeah, no, that's something, again, we let them know that beforehand, that there won't be much contact from us, but they know where we are if they need us, because we're not there. We're not the eyes on the grind, you know, and the message we could give them could be very different from what they're seeing out there in terms of a coach team. Or it could be the same message, but worded differently, and that still causes confusion. So it's best just to park the bus and let them go.
Yeah, we've had a lot of communication with Dave and the Olympic coaching team over the last, you know, 6 or 8 weeks since they made the team. And the athletes have as well. The athletes have been working with them once a week on a Zoom call just to build that relationship. Myself and Stu have had meetings with Dave, you know, every few weeks as well. So it's all been planned out really well. So they know what they're doing. They know how it should be done. Any issues, then they will get hold of us. But it has to be coach led and not confusion in the last couple of weeks.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about kind of preparing swimmers to then go away on that Olympic Games in the run up. Obviously, coming off the back of selection at trials, it's not a long period of time then before they then go off and swim at the Games. So what goes into being able to make sure they can get a cycle of training done within that time?
You're right, it's not a long period of time, and the world that we're currently living in has probably made it even more complicated with know, Europeans getting bumped to this season from last year, and then, you know, back from that straight to Glasgow, and then obviously kit days and things like that. So it, you know, it condenses it down, and I think that's probably been the biggest challenge, is how do we manage them through those periods of time where, you know, so we were in Glasgow, but the guys were actually working with the Olympic coaches there. So, it's not been easy, but I guess, again, it comes down to planning and just making sure that the athletes know the plan in advance, and this is what we're trying to do and stick to it as best we can.
Yeah, I think, like you said, planning and communication were key, but also us not showing the athlete that we might think that they needed to be here and instead of doing other things.
Yeah,
you know, so they were going off doing all sorts of stuff, which they had to do, and we understand that. So, and they were getting a little bit stressed about that, but we couldn't show that it was an issue.
Yeah.
We had to just, you know, show them that, okay, it's not a problem, we've got this plan, and it will work out fine. So it was that communication and planning, but us making sure that we're really positive with them about it all the way through.
And I guess, like, when it comes down to it as well, they've got now, like, a couple of weeks still until the games actually kick off. So they've got kind of 2 weeks of training out there. And then they had the weeks of training after selection as well. So it's almost like you were looking after kind of maybe a bit of a building phase or a phase of training that led up to them going out on camp. And now they're out on camp, it's kind of a little bit more preparation based, right?
Yeah. I think the thing to remember each time is just because you've done trials, all the work you've done before trials hasn't gone. That's meters in the bank. Now, all those gains are in the bank. They're already there. So all you're trying to do really from trials moving into the summer then is, okay, where are we? What do we need to still evolve? What can we still work on? So all the work you did through the winter hasn't gone.
Yeah.
You're just trying to, you know, put the icing on the cake really in the last, because it was only a 12-week cycle. So it's been pretty quick turnaround. So you're not going to get the same amount of work done as you would get through in a standard British winter, if you like. So, but those meters are there. They're in the bank. They're already done.
And what was it like, kind of, with someone, for example, making an Olympic team is a fantastic achievement. And for someone like, you know, Alice, who was a fantastic achievement to make the team after disappointment in 2016, and, you know, that must have been like a real big kind of high for her. How did she cope, or how did you guys cope as a team with then having, okay, we've got to just get grounded again, and we've got to try and go again into Tokyo? How was that process for you?
It was difficult. I think it was the same with Dan. Dan didn't qualify in 2016. He was the ranked number one swimmer going in, and he didn't qualify. Similar situation to Alice. So the build up into the trials was pretty intense because of that.
Yeah.
So we had two athletes going in, hadn't missed it last time. We were confident that they could qualify. We knew if they did what they could do, they would be okay. It was a bit up and down at trials because Dan's last event was on the last day. He obviously didn't qualify on the 400 or the 800 beforehand, even though he swam well. So by then, Alice had already qualified, I think, on the tuna fly halfway through the week.
I think she was like day three or day four. But even within that, she had to watch Haz qualify on day one on 100 fly, you know, and swim an event which Alice has historically been like one in Britain on. So, you know, there's a new kid on the block, if you like, and for it to come from within the same program, you know, she managed it really well, and she handled it really professionally, and she was really happy for Haz. And she just realized, she just knew, well, my day is still to come.
It was a big team effort, I think, not just myself and Stu. You know, we have a big team that work with the athletes. So it's just about keeping them relaxed through the week. You know, just getting them to trust and believe in the training that they've done. And just not building it up into something that it is a big thing, trying to qualify for Olympic Games, but just trying to keep it as well. It's another race, execute process. Execute skills, and you will get there. And thankfully it worked out okay.
And I think the key thing is you see it a lot with certainly with younger coaches, when they get to that sort of level, you can see the nerves start to appear in the coach. And if that happens, the swimmers will pick up on it. And they will pick up on it quicker than you even realize they'll pick up on it. So, you know, I remember before the 100 fly, I was prattling about at the back at trials with Haz and Alice, just trying to keep them relaxed. So you might be nervous on the inside, but you can't let that show on the outside at all.
You mentioned there, Adam, about Dan also had disappointment in 16, but he also had, you know, not a tough time at trials this time around, but you said it was up and down through the week at trials this time around with Dan. What do you think in terms of kind of rewinding it right back to kind of age group and youth level? What do you think are like values that swimmers need to be developing kind of at those ages, or experiences they need to have at those ages, to make sure that when they get into adulthood, they're able to kind of deal with those kind of situations in a relaxed manner and still get the job done like he did on the final day?
Yeah, we've spent a lot of time working with Dan. Obviously, Dan came onto the scene maybe in 2014. From just like a club swimmer, he came into our program and went to European Juniors and won in 2014. He then went to Commonwealth Games and got a bronze in 2014. So it was a massive high for him. He hadn't really experienced any of that type of stuff before. As I said, he was just a club swimmer. So that was all really new to him. And then it started to, he didn't start to swim badly, but the pressure that he felt under after having some success started to get to him a little bit. So we did quite a lot of work with him around dealing with stress and just relaxing. And that's only just come together, to be honest, in the last year. You know, Dan's always had some issues around putting too much pressure on himself. But it's just constant working with a psychologist, working with the team of people we have here. And like Stu said earlier, we do a lot of stuff around, we were just messing around with the athletes and trying to keep them relaxed and trying not to talk about swimming. And even at the trials, you know, me and Dan hardly spoke about the race because we had done all that before. We knew the plan. It was the outside people that maybe put a little bit of pressure on Dan after the first race, after the 400 free when he didn't qualify. Even though he swam a best time, people just expected him to win. So he swam a best time in the 400. Then all of a sudden, people are asking him, well, are you okay? You've not qualified. I'm like, yeah, it was the best time. So it's a great swim. It's just two other people swam better on the day. So we've worked with him around that over the years, around ignoring the noise from the outside and focusing on the plan that we had put in place before trials. And then when we get to trials, it's just about staying relaxed. I don't know if that makes sense or answer the question, but...
No, yeah, absolutely. I think just a kind of a follow-up to that, I think like now, like in 2021, this is probably the first games we've had where there's been kind of more swimming media on social media in terms of more people with opinions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How has that been for you guys and the swimmers in terms of either seeing that or not seeing that and just trying to stay away from it?
I think for us, it's one thing we're not very good at.
I'm not on social media, so yeah. I don't know anything about it.
I don't tend to follow any swimmers or anything really much to do with swimming on social media because, you know, I think just people get so engrossed in it. You've got to have a life outside of it as well. Now, in saying that, that might be the right thing for me. Do the swimmers do that? Probably not. And sometimes they can get, and I know with Alice in particular, we've had to sort of say to her in the past, the answers you're looking for, you're not going to find on social media.
Yeah.
All you're going to do with social media is compound how you might be thinking. And it's never a good way you're thinking when, you know, the answer you'll find on social media is not something that's going to back you up. So, yeah, there is a lot of noise out there. And it's something that we can probably both do better in terms of managing that noise with them. But ultimately, the swimmers have to make those decisions. When do they stop looking at it? When do they start looking at or stop looking at results from other meets around the world or whatever? So, because, yeah, 9 times out of 10, that's not going to be a good return for you. If you're feeling a little bit down about something and you go looking on the internet, it probably isn't going to help you.
Dan's okay on social media. He's on his social media accounts, but he doesn't. He's not a big follower of sport, including his own sport. So he might not know much about results around the world in swimming. I've tried to talk to him, and I didn't see how that. No, he doesn't know anything about it, which is a good thing, I think.
Yeah,
he doesn't want to see that, and that's not something that we've necessarily worked with them, but. I said I'm not on social media at all, so I keep myself away from all of that.
Yeah, I can't blame you, to be honest.
Alice is on there, and Graham Wardell was just speaking this morning about. Again, I don't follow any of our swimmers on social media, so I don't see their stuff. But Graham was saying that some Japanese lad has posted pictures of her in her outfit, her GBR kit for the fly out on Saturday, and somebody from Japan has got on there and says, please don't come to our country and kill us. Yeah.
Crazy.
So, there's always noise out there. No, that's not going to change, but
it's just getting rid of that noise, and I suppose as a national team and for Wales, we do quite a lot of education around winning behaviours and thought process, and I suppose that noise comes into that. We do that from quite a young age on our national skills academy, and then through our youth squads. So we're hoping that the next crop of athletes will be able to really manage that really, really well because of the winning behaviours project that we've done with them.
And then to use Alice as an example, she has a little, she just called it a support bubble. Who's in her bubble? And this was something that came before COVID and bubbles and all that kind of stuff. But unless you're in that bubble, your opinion doesn't matter to Alice.
Yeah.
And that's something that she stuck to through and through. So unless you're within that small group of people, you can have an opinion, but I'm not going to listen to it.
Yeah. I think that's a fantastic way to kind of, like you say, kind of keep a lot of the noise out when you've only listening to a few things, then that makes your life a lot easier, right?
Yeah.
So speaking of more specifically kind of Wales and Team Wales, Swim Wales, next year obviously is the Commonwealth Games. What are your hopes as a centre for the Games in terms of athletes?
Well, I don't know. We'll get through these games first, shall we? And then we can maybe think about that. Last time at Commonwealth Games from the centre, it was a new centre, pretty much. We were a couple of years in. I think we have three or four maybe make the team from the centre. Dan, Alice, Barn. Yeah, maybe three or four, I think, from the centre last time. So we have some good hopes, I think, that we'd like to put some more athletes on the team. We're hoping to be able to, like Dan and Alice has been to three, Dan's been to two, so that they've got great experience for the up and coming guys. But we'll just see how we go over the next few months. We can put some more athletes on the team, some of our up and coming guys, that'd be fantastic.
I think the important thing is exactly that. Let's get athletes on the team first.
Yeah.
Because you have all these aspirations of, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to win that number of medals and all the rest of it. But if you don't get athletes on the team, there's no point even worrying about that first. So, at the moment, the sole focus is let's get as many of them on the team as we possibly can. We've got a couple of young ones who will be rattling some qualifying or consideration times this summer. So, if we can get a couple of them on early doors, that's going to make life a lot easier in terms of the running then to April when the final trials will be,
The times are challenging as well. It's Wales, they're easy qualifying times. There's no easy route onto Commonwealth Games.
No.
So the times are really challenging. They're based on, I think, the top six, I think, averaged out over a period of Commonwealth Games. So they're really challenging times. But yeah, our target will be to put as many on as we can. And hopefully some of our up-and-coming guys will make that team next year.
But also, they're just doing a time at the moment doesn't guarantee a selection.
Right.
So, there is a consideration time, but that's literally all it is. And from that point, they'll be ranked in terms of how far inside that consideration time you are. So depending on the number of people who qualify, there could be a couple of people who potentially do a qualifying time or a consideration time, should I say, and not get on the team. That's probably unlikely, but that's the reality of the selection policy that we're working to.
Yeah. So it's a Team Wales selection policy. So I think there's 85 maybe places for right. all sports.
Oh, wow.
So we could get 10 or 15 on, like Stu said, but wherever they're ranked, if there's people ranked higher in the Commonwealth, then that's how that works for us.
Right. So it's almost like getting a consideration time gets your name into a discussion, but then compared to kind of how other people are doing, et cetera, then that determines what the qualification is, right?
Yeah, so if you're a couple of tenths under or a couple of hundreds under, might be a little bit more risky, a little bit more squeaky bum for you than it would be for someone who's 3 or 4 seconds under.
Gotcha. Right. Guys, it's been fantastic speaking to you. I think I've kind of gone through all the questions that are on my list of questions to ask. Thank you for kind of giving some great answers. Ali, as we get towards the end of episodes, kind of I always ask guests for kind of top three tips on something. And I thought, seeing as it's the first time we've had kind of two guests on, then I'll give you six rather than top three. So but again, because it's such almost a unique way of working that you've got down there in Swansea for a swimming program, I'm going to ask you for your top three tips on making sure you're kind of, if you're working as a cohesive team.
I think communication is probably the most important between us and the rest of the coaching team, but the athletes as well.
Planning,
yeah, the planning needs to be on point, and that needs to be done together. So we can't run off and do our own planning. It needs to be really worked out together. And for me, I think over the years we've built up a level of trust and a strong relationship between us as two coaches. So that level of trust now is the strongest it's ever been. Like we started off at the start of the chat, was before we set up the centre, Stu would be over on this side working for one employer, I'd be over this side working for somebody else. We both had different agendas, so we had to build that relationship together, and that comes down to trust, I think.
Yeah.
Don't know if there's anything else, is there?
No, not necessarily in terms of the key things from the sender, from that sort of perspective in terms of working together. But the one thing I would sort of say to athletes out there, if they listen to this, and we see this every year, is leg kick. Kick is massively underdeveloped. When swimmers come to the program. And I know why coaches have done it. And, historically, I came from the Bill Sweetnam era where it was all about volume. And when you've got minimal pull time and you've got to get so many meters in, the first thing you do is you get rid of kick. But kick is, certainly from what we see coming in, there is a massive opportunity for athletes to get better just by improving that kick in those age group sort of years and the youth years before they would get to a senior program like us.
I couldn't agree more with that. I'm a big fan of some big kick sets, but not only kind of volume kick sets, but also getting some good intensity within the kick set as well, because you've got to be able to kick fast, but you've got to be able to maintain that as well. So I really do agree with that concept of don't forget the kick.
And I think just on that, because I know one of the things you put on about was Alice and how we kept her going. Well, Alice, I'm sure she won't mind me saying, has got a bit of a gammy wrist. It's been operated on a couple of times. So when her wrist is played up, we've turned what some people could see as a negative into an opportunity. And everyone will look back at Commonwealth Games swims or any of us swims recently and say, oh, she's so good off the walls. But the only reason she's so good off the walls is we turned adversity into an opportunity.
Yeah.
So, and kick is the fifth stroke. So don't sacrifice it, is what I say.
Perfect. Brilliant. Stuart, Adam, thank you so much for your time. It's been great speaking to you. And like I say, thank you for, your well thought out answers. I certainly found them really interesting. So I hope the listeners have enjoyed the episode too.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay, so that brings episode 7 of this series to a close. Big thanks to Stuart and Adam for taking time out of their day to sit down and have that discussion with me. It was great to hear their thoughts on not only preparing swimmers for Olympic Games, but also you know, what it's like for them as coaches now having to take a little bit of a step back, and also talking about some of those journeys along the way building up to this Games following 2016 as well. If you like the episode, make sure you share it amongst your coaching network, but also give us some feedback. We're on social media, Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at The Poolside Pass. Don't forget, check out our website, www.thepoolsidepass.com. You can find all our previous episodes of the podcast over on there as well. There will be an episode 8 for this series, but we're going to take just a few weeks off, let everyone enjoy the Olympics, recover from the Olympics, and then I hope to be bringing you episode 8 towards the middle of August. So until then, enjoy the Olympics and take care.